You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Did you know that Richmond, Milpitas, and Palo Alto all had subdivisions where it was illegal for African Americans to own a house? Those are some of the racist policies Richard Rothstein takes on in his book, The Color of Law, a forgotten history of how our government segregated America. Many of the Bay Area's segregated low-income neighborhoods can be traced directly back to discriminatory housing policies either created or enforced by local, state, and federal authorities. Richard Rothstein moderated a panel discussion on housing this week at the conference Race and Inequality, the Kerner Commission at 50, hosted at UC Berkeley. And he talked about the racist legacy of American housing policy on the program Your Call with KALW's Rose Aguilar. Here's what he had to say.
Public housing in this country began in the mid-20th century in the New Deal during the Roosevelt administration. It was the first civilian public housing ever built, and it began as a project for working-class families, not for poor people, for people who had jobs, but in the Depression had no housing. And it was mostly for whites, and the federal government built the Public Works Administration, one of the first New Deal agencies, built the first civilian public housing in this country. And everywhere in the country, it created segregated projects, even where communities were previously integrated. There were many integrated neighborhoods in the mid-20th century or early 20th century. We would be stunned if we were transported back to that period and saw how much integration, residential integration, there was, for the simple reason that working class people didn't have automobiles to get to work, so they all had to live close enough to the factories where they worked or the other workplaces. And so if you had a factory that was had Irish immigrant workers and Italian immigrant workers and Jewish immigrant workers and African Americans, they all did live in roughly the same neighborhoods near the factories. So Langston Hughes, the great African American poet, novelist, playwright, wrote about how he grew up in an integrated downtown Cleveland neighborhood. We don't think of Cleveland as being an integrated place. He said his best friend was Polish. He dated a Jewish girl. That neighborhood where he grew up, an integrated neighborhood, it was a neighborhood where the Public Works Administration demolished housing and built two separate projects, one for whites and one for African Americans, creating segregation that previously hadn't existed and might not have existed if that hadn't been done. And this pattern was created everywhere in the country. Cambridge, Massachusetts, we think of it as being a liberal area. The area near MIT was also an integrated community, about half black, half white. The Public Works Administration demolished housing in that integrated neighborhood to build two separate projects, one for African Americans and one for whites. Well, this continued for the next 20 years. And by the early 1950s, we saw development everywhere in the country that there were large numbers of vacancies in the white projects and long waiting lists in the black projects. Eventually, the situation became so conspicuous that all the projects were opened up to African Americans. And about the same time, industry left the cities, and there were fewer and fewer jobs for the people who were living in these public housing projects. They became poorer and poorer. And then for the first time about 1950, public housing began to be a subsidized program for people who couldn't afford private housing, and almost all black at the time, and without jobs and without hope, without opportunities, being concentrated in these downtown areas. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the federal government was subsidizing the movement of white families only to single-family homes in the suburbs. The Federal Housing Administration recruited mass production builders, people like Henry Dolger here in the San Francisco area, to build the Westlake development in Daly City, or San Lorenzo a bit earlier, but still with the same Federal Housing Administration policy. A builder named David Bohannon built that. And the FHA, in order to grant the guarantees for bank loans for these developers to build giant developments, they never could have assembled the capital to build a development with tens of thousands of homes in one place on their own. The Federal Housing Administration gave them guaranteed bank loans on condition that they sell no homes to African Americans, and indeed required that the deed of every home in these developments include a clause prohibiting resale or rental to African Americans. So there were many, many other policies that the federal government followed and state and local governments followed, but these two, the Federal Housing Administration creation of the suburbs on a white-only basis and the Public Works Administration and succeeding housing agencies concentrating African Americans in central cities where they became poorer and poorer, created the metropolitan landscape that we see today. You talk about the image that we have of African Americans. Well, white families, whites generally, look at the way we've concentrated African Americans, although they don't understand that it was we who concentrated them, we the government of the country. They look at African Americans living in poverty without opportunity, and they assume that this is characteristic of African Americans rather than understanding that this is the product of an explicit government policy. Mm-hmm. There were many, many African Americans in the early 1950s, late 1940s, who could have afforded to buy those homes, the single-family homes that the governments were creating in places like Westlake and San Lorenzo or others in this area and throughout the country. Levittown is probably the best example, east of New York City and well-known. Many African Americans could have afforded to buy those homes. They were very inexpensive. They were cost about $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 at the time. That's about $100,000 in today's money, about twice national median income. Working class families of either race could have afforded to buy those homes. African Americans were prohibited from doing so, required to continue living in urban areas, renting apartments either in public housing or in private market. And the whites were subsidized. The subsidy to whites was so great that they could leave public housing, which, as I said, was not for poor people at the time. It was for working class families. They could leave public housing and move into single family homes in suburbs like Levittown or Westlake or San Lorenzo and pay less in their monthly VA and FHA mortgages and other housing costs, pay less for housing in these single family homes than they were paying for rent in public housing. So we created this situation, and African-American neighborhoods became more and more overcrowded, as well as depressed because of lack of employment opportunities, more and more overcrowded because they were restricted in where they could move. There were no opportunities outside urban areas. As they became more overcrowded, conditions deteriorated in the communities. City services typically declined at that point, less garbage collection. They became slums. And whites looked at these communities and decided that African Americans were slum dwellers and therefore should be avoided. But this was all the product of government policy. This was not something that happened naturally. It was not something that happened by accident. It was not, as we commonly think, something de facto. It was a legal creation, just as the segregation of schools or the segregation of restaurants or the segregation of transportation was done by government in the 20th century.